Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 12, Mohini Murti Bewilders Lord Shiva, text number 5. Adyanta Vasya Yan Madhyam Idam Anyad Aham Bahi Yato Vya Yasya Naitani Tat Satyam Brahma Chid Bhavan. Adi, in the beginning, Antao, and the end, Asya, of this manifested cosmos or of anything material or visible. Yat, which, that which, madhyam, between the beginning and the end, the substance, idam, this cosmic manifestation, anyat, anything other than you, aham, the wrong mental conception, Bahi, outside of you, yataha, because of, avyasya, the inexhaustible, na, not, etani, all these differences, tat, that, satyam, the absolute truth, Brahma, the supreme, Chit, spiritual, Bhavan, your lordship. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The manifest, the unmanifest, false ego, and the beginning, maintenance, and annihilation of this cosmic manifestation all comes from you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because you are the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Absolute Spirit Soul, the Supreme Brahman, such changes as birth, death, and substance do not exist in you. Purport, according to the Vedic mantras, Yato va imani bhutani jayante. Everything is an emanation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 7:4. Bhumir apana lovayu kamano buddhevacha ahankara iti ame bina prakriti ashtada. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Altogether, these eight comprise my separated material energies. In other words, the ingredients of the cosmic manifestation also consist of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This does not mean, however, that because the ingredients come from Him, He is no longer complete. Purnasya purnam adaya purnam eva vishishate. Because He is a complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from Him, He remains the complete balance. Thus the Lord is called avyaya, inexhaustible. Unless we accept the absolute truth as achintya beta beta, simultaneously one and different, we cannot have a clear conception of the absolute truth. The Lord is the root of everything. Aham adhira hi devana. He is the original cause of all the devas, or demigods. Aham sarvasya prabhavaha. Everything emanates from Him. In all cases, nominative, objective, positive, negative, and so on. Whatever we may conceive of in this entire cosmic manifestation is in fact the Supreme Lord. For Him there is no such distinctions as this is mine and this belongs to someone else, because He is everything. He is therefore called avyaya, changeless and inexhaustible, Because the Supreme Lord is Avya, He is the Absolute Truth, the fully spiritual Supreme Brahman. Adyanta vasya yanmahan madhyam idam ad anyad aham bahi ito va yasya naitani netat satyam brahmachit bhavam. The manifest, the unmanifest, false ego in the beginning, maintenance and annihilation of this cosmic manifestation, all come from you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because you are the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Absolute Supreme Spirit, the Supreme Brahman, such changes as birth, death, and substance do not exist in you. Two parts of our philosophy. One is that what is spirit? Who's the Supreme Spirit? And what our relationship with him is? Second part is called Abhideya. What is the activities necessary to reach Prayojana, to realize Krishna? We hear repeatedly how everything is coming from Krishna. And when we look around, we don't necessarily see that. When we look around, we think many things, but not necessarily see that everything has come from Krishna. But it's a theory, at least. And the philosophical explanation of things is meant to gradually help us assimilate that knowledge so that one day everything that we look at will remind us of Krishna, that Krishna is behind this, it's come from Krishna, and therefore there can't be anything separated from Krishna. Now to realize that, of course, we have Abhideya, which is devotional service, the practical activities, and amongst Abhideya, we have two things. Number one is that we do things that Krishna tells us. Well, actually, there's three things. One is that we do things that Krishna wants us to do. Number two, we do it to please Krishna. And number three, we have no other motivation other than that. Then we can actually experience Prayojana. And part of Prayojana is explained here, that nothing here is different from Krishna. In other words, as Krishna is full of bliss and full of knowledge eternally, so everyone here, by nature at least, is full of bliss, full of knowledge eternally. That's our constitutional position. In the material world, everyone's competing to become the most knowledgeable about what will make them the most happy. And everyone's in competition, but here we may win for one lifetime and then come in last in our next lifetime. So sometimes it appears that we're winning, sometimes it appears that we're in between, sometimes it looks like we're in a very precarious situation, that we're coming in literally dead last. But all this competition, all this anxiety, what my position is, has nothing to do with reality, because in our normal position, we're full of bliss, full of knowledge eternally, beyond our wildest imaginations. And in that state of selfless love for Krishna and everyone and everything in relationship to Krishna, there's no envy, and therefore there's no competition, except to make other people, especially Krishna, happy. The only desire of the soul is to try to make Krishna happy. And Krishna is happy when the soul tries to make Krishna's expansions happy. So, in a life where one's only motivation is to make others happy, how can one be unhappy? How can there be any envy? How can there be any lamentation or hankering if our own motivation is to try to make others happy under the direction of Krishna, who knows perfectly what the formula for happiness is, because he has unlimited happiness? But under the spell of the modes of material nature, we see things according to the modes we're situated under. As Krishna says, Sattva Nirupa Sarvasha, Shraddha Bhavati Bharata, Shraddha Mayo Yo Purusho, Yo Yes Charas Eva Saha. That according to one's existence under the modes of material nature, one evolves a particular kind of faith. So whatever we're looking around, actually what we're not seeing is reality, we're seeing what's covering us. There's a reality, but that reality is being filtered through the modes of material nature we've acquired. Now, what to do? Well, first of all, to try to understand that this is how we're seeing things. It's not reality. It's not the full reality. It's not that we say that everything is completely unreal and that there's no floor here, or that there's no walls, or there's not such thing as men and women. These things exist in the material world, but not in the way we think they exist. It's like Sri Devi has glasses. She takes the glasses off. I don't know how much she sees. But when she puts the glasses on, I imagine she's seeing better. Isn't there? So, we don't have glasses on. The glasses are the scripture. And we don't have our glasses on. Then we see according to whatever we could say imagination, because we're imagining to making images, but we're making images according to the three modes. In ignorance, we think just like when Krishna walked in to battle against the restless, Chanura, Mustika, Toshala, Kansa had arranged a wrestling match. Hopefully, he was thinking that hopefully he would be able to kill Krishna that way. So Krishna walked in, and even Krishna, everyone saw differently, what to speak of an ordinary living entity. Everyone saw Krishna according to their conception. The wrestlers saw him like a thunderbolt. Kansa saw him as death personified. The young girl saw him as Cupid personified. Members of the Vrishni dynasty saw him as their most illustrious ancestor. The mother Devaki and Vasudev saw him as their most beloved child. And the yogi saw him as a super soul. And those who were foolish and unintelligent saw him as a fool and unintelligent. Actually, they saw him as the universal form. So everyone saw Krishna differently, and that means we also see everything differently according to the modes that we're working under. But if we're constantly hearing everything comes from Krishna, why are we hearing that? Because we haven't accepted the first time, or the second time, or the 100th time. And what's the point? All right, everything, I accept. I'm up against the corner. I surrender. Everything belongs to Krishna. So what? No, then if we accept it, then we have to act accordingly to that. We have to respect everything as Krishna's energy. One time a devotee was kicking a pillow actually with his foot. And Prabhupada said, don't kick it with your foot. That pillow is more sacred than you, their foot is. Because it's Krishna's tadiyanam. It's Krishna's energy. As Lord Shiva told Parvati, Aradhanam nam sarvesham, Vishnu aradhanam param, tasmat paratram devi tadiyanam samacharam. That, my dear Devi, the best person to worship is Vishnu. But even better than worship Krishna is tadiyanam. Tadiyanam means anything in relation to Krishna. Of course, it means Krishna's devotees, but also means Krishna's paraphernalia. And as one's for a neophyte devotee, it says in the Krishna book, in the prayers personified Vedas, that the devotee, at least on the beginning platform, sees the deity in the temple and perhaps some elevated devotees as being devotees. But an intermediate devotee, a devotee on the Madhyama Adhikari platform, sees all the Vaishnavas and even the aspiring Vaishnavas as representatives of Krishna. So how often during the day do we see a devotee and we think, oh, this is a representative of Krishna, rather than whatever our mind comes or tells us we're dealing with. How many different conceptions does our mind race through, and we automatically, spontaneously accept them? Just like automatically, spontaneously, we actually believe to some extent or another, we are this body. We may not be completely convinced because somehow or another our 100% faith in being this body has been shaken by some association with devotees. Somehow or another it's slackened a little bit. But it's still to some extent pretty much in force. The most dear object in this universe is not necessarily to us, is not necessarily the deities. It may be our body, our prayers, our aspirations, generally centered around our body and our mind. Therefore, as I've said many times, this body is more or less one of our deities, one of the objects of our love and devotion. Probably, obviously, for especially neophyte devotees, we feel more love and affection for our body, more concern than we do for the deities. Or to speak of the holy name. When someone chants the holy name, we may feel a little good, we may even try to pay a little attention. But if someone chants our name, then our ears kind of expand and we sink in the nectar. The sound of our name is usually, we're much more affectionate to it than we are to Krishna and his representatives. Everything about this body we love. Even everyone thinks it smells terrible, but somehow or another we're attracted to it. So it's not us, it's something other than us, but we're attracted to it. But by trying to please Krishna, by following his instructions, well, first of all, trying to see that there's something else going on there that I'd like to find out. I'd like to find out who Krishna really is. I'd like to get some experience of what really Krishna consciousness is all about. I'd like to get some, Prabhupada said, we should pray like that. We should think like that. And hopefully we can get a higher taste. Krishna will recognize that we actually want that. Enough that we're prepared to give up some of our material conceptions. Now we very carefully, since time immemorial, cultivated these conceptions, and they resulted in this body that we presently have. So it's these conceptions, these habits we have been very, very carefully cultivated and have culminated in this lifetime. So it's not so easy to give them up. And the hardest thing to give up is the idea, what to speak of that Krishna is God, to give up the idea that I'm not God myself to anyone or anything. To actually become the servant of Krishna's servants to begin with, that's just practicing to become the servant of Krishna's servant. Wherever we look, we see as an opportunity for service. And then ultimately one becomes a servant, feels oneself to be the servant of all living entities. But we have to practice in a different way. For the common person, he practices matrivat paradareshu, paradwareshu, losravat, atmavat sarabhuteshu, yakpashiti sapandita. The ordinary person, to become civilized, and as we know, most people, they believe they're already civilized. And they think that they're the only ones who are civilized. As a matter of fact, you go to any place in this world, and most of the people in their hearts think that only their country is civilized, is really civilized. And these other countries, as much as they resemble my country, then they're also civilized. And our duty is to show them a good example, so that they can become like us. But Chanakapanda gives us a different understanding, a different standard of what actually is civilized. He says, Matriva Paradareshu. Now, where is this being taught that one should see every lady except for one's wife to be like one's mother? If you go to a university and say, I'd like to teach a course to everyone at this university, I learned it in my school, that one should learn how to see every lady here except for one's wife to be like one's mother. Do you think it would be very much accepted in colleges nowadays? No, one is taught, one should see every lady and perhaps even one's mother as one's wife. And what does he speak of ladies? Anything that moves. Or sometimes even things that are dead. And paradwareshu lustarvat. Everyone's property is like garbage in the street. So who's seeing like that? As I've said often, people are taught give and take. You've heard of that philosophy of give and take? You give to me and I take from you. That's called give and take. And see all living entities as being just like oneself. But that's not possible in modern society. What to speak of, I mean, how many people here would like to be eaten by their neighbor? You're invited to the next feast we have at our house, and you're the prasadam. Don't worry, we're going to offer you before we eat you. How many people would actually be interested in going to such a feast? And yet, people, that's the basis of modern society. As I said, they're offering first the animals, any kind of animal, except for the dog. But sometimes people eat dogs too, just for a taste, different experience. Dogs or cats. Although that seems abominable to us, but in some parts of the world, that's the standard. As I said before, one lady in Hong Kong, she took a very beautiful French poodle. It was just white French poodle, and you know, the tail, the fur was exactly manicured. It was cut so, you know, perfect circle around the little dog's tail, and it just looked like, you know, a little model. French poodle. She was taking her. Very wealthy lady. She came, she decided she was in Hong Kong. She was going to try out one Hong Kong restaurant. She heard, Chinese restaurant. She heard it was first class. But there was a sign on the door, no animals allowed in. So she gave the doorkeeper the animal and said, please take care of my dog. And the man smiled at her and said, sure, of course. She ordered the meal. She had an extra preparation presented to her for free. And she was very happy. She came out and said, where's my dog? What happened, Sri Devi? You heard the story before.
He served it to you, ma'am.
Yes, it's very good. And here's the fur. You can take it home and stuff it. So, for us, this seems horrible. I mean, how many would want to eat their French poodle? But for other cultures, it's completely normal. But this idea that all living entities are the same as we are, what to speak of the little ant? You think, get away, my aunt. You know, I'm so big and you're so small. You know, if I breathe on you, you're finished. Respect me. Like every year, the ants come to my room for darshan. Because I have pictures of Krishna and Prabhupada everywhere. So they come to my room for darshan. And they're not invited. And I'm not really so happy that they're there, to tell you the truth. Although there's probably room enough for all of us. I'm not always so appreciative. But that's not due to their fault. They're just looking for some shelter. And probably they don't really care if I'm a devotee or not. They're just looking for any shelter, or at least aspiring devotee. They're looking for some shelter. But I'm not really offering it to them very happily. So these are the basic principles for human life. To see every lady as like one's mother. To see every man except for one's husband to be like one's son. To think everyone's property is like except for one's own. Not to be envious and try to acquire it. And to see all living entities as like one's own self. This is just human life. It's not even spiritual. And then spiritual is everything here is Krishna's. Everything is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. And when we utilize everything for Krishna's enjoyment, we'll find out that Krishna is our best friend. That we get all benedictions from Krishna. All, and everyone can get all benedictions from Krishna just by following that formula. And then there can be real peace. So although Krishna consciousness seems like rather a repetitious philosophy, and it is repetitious if we don't experience it. And then it becomes wonderful and glorious once we start experiencing it by not only understanding it, but actually trying to practice it to the best of our ability. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for this class. As you were speaking about this dog-eating business, I was remembering that verse in Bhagavad Gita, you know, the learned and humble sages by virtue of true knowledge, Vidyavinay. But devotee feels disgusted seeing all this kind of abominable way of living. But he's encouraged to look at everyone with the same equal vision. How can we reconcile those two things?
Well, we're certainly not meant to see everyone with the same vision exactly like that. But we're meant to see the soul within everyone. So the soul in the body of a dog and the soul in the body of a Brahmin, the qualitatively the soul is the same. But the one who has the body of a dog, the soul, got that due to his misdeeds. And the Brahmin got that body because he followed Krishna's instructions. So they're not exactly the same. And obviously, for instance, we offer a prasadam to the Brahmin, but we don't offer prasadam necessarily to the tiger in the cage. So we see simultaneously one and different. We see that it's just like in the society, everyone may be a citizen of Slovenia, but not everyone is the prime minister of Slovenia. And the people in the jail are not necessarily on the same level as an ordinary citizen. So there are differentiations, although everyone is a citizen of Slovenia. So we see the sameness, but we see the difference too.
So what should a devotee's attitude be towards, you know, dog eaters and cat eaters and pig eaters and cow eaters? How are we supposed to be with them?
We give them prasadam. And we give them, hopefully, the holy name and like that. So we give them a higher taste. Imagine if you were a dog eater and you got some nice prasadam, you probably, hopefully, you'll appreciate the prasadam more than you do the dog. And one day, just like Murari, the hunter, he was half killing animals, but by the association of Narada Muni, he became a great saintly person to the extent that he wouldn't even harm even an ant. So we give them Krishna consciousness. We try to wake them up. We may condemn others. We think they're asleep. They're doing abominable things. But from the point of view of the demigods, we're pretty much asleep right now too. We're doing things that are probably not desirable either. So it depends who's looking at who.
Right.
But we can see the fault. As Jesus Christ said, don't hate the sinner, hate the sin. But when we see something wrong, if we can, we try to help them, correct it, not condemn them.
But even when we give them prasadam, I remember Srila Prabhupada said somewhere, I don't know, China or something, they were, you know, dipping all dead animals in some and drinking that liquid. And when devotees were cooking, the smell of ghee was too much for them. They were saying, what is this? You're cooking in ghee. We don't like the smell.
Yeah, so some people are fortunate, some people are unfortunate. Bhagavan. We look for the fortunate people. We hope everyone could be fortunate, but not everyone is necessarily fortunate, nor do we have the power to save everyone. While a more advanced devotee may have more power than we do to help them. But we do the best we can.
So we just continue understanding our limitations and understanding that not everyone will accept it.
Yeah, of course. Otherwise we'll become envious of them. How dare you defy such a powerful devotee as me?
Thank you, Bhagavan.
It's probably not the best way of attracting people because everyone here is thinking the same thing, that I'm the most powerful, I'm the best, I'm this and that. And if we appreciate others, you know, we show some appreciation, we can find something we appreciate, we're much more likely to attract them than simply condemning them. My dear sir, here's a book for you. We're looking for the most rotten, fallen meat eaters that we can find, and you look like one of them. He's probably not going to say, sure, wow, this is fantastic. How much is this book?
Right.
But according to Bodhananda Saraswati, if we say, my dear sir, you're the most effulgent person I saw today, you seem to be most intelligent, this book really is meant for you, then they're much more likely to be attracted to it.
So one must somehow or the other find compassion within one's heart to give the book or give prasadam rather than getting put off or disgusted or annoyed.
Well, I think the most important thing is to find compassion for ourselves. Because if we have the right attitude and we do the right activities, then Krishna will bless us. And if we're blessed, we'll be able to understand, we'll be able to, if we experience Krishna's compassion to ourselves and gradually, we'll be able to experience Krishna's compassion for others too.
So when you say, first we need to feel compassion for ourselves, what does that look like?
We'll look in the mirror, see what we look like. That we're trapped in these bodies. We're prone to do all kinds of nonsense things and think all kinds of nonsense things, and see things in all kinds of nonsense ways. So we try to see things properly, think the thing, feel things properly, do things properly, then we'll become liberated from this horrible existence we're living in now. And we'll be able to awaken ourselves to reality, which is glorious reality. Therefore, Sanatana Goswami first of all asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who am I and why am I suffering? And if we look at others and think, oh, this person's suffering, you know, I'm going to save them. But we ourselves are in a similar position than they are.
Right.
So we try to take shelter of Krishna and his representatives to be saved. And that way we can become their instruments to save others.
Yeah, that's a lot to actually work on right there. Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. Anything else? Khwala, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam.